everyone. Welcome to WEC Podcast, episode number 3. I'm Kevin.
I'm Mandy.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Katie.
And today we're going to start with Kelly.
So on our last episode, we had talked about zombies, and I was so mad at myself when we got done because I forgot to talk about my favorite zombie story, which is the audio podcast drama, We're Alive, which is subtitled A Story of Survival. And it is, anyone who gets into it now is so lucky because you get to listen to the whole thing without hiatus. The story is set up in 4 seasons. I don't know how many episodes are in each season, but they have chapters. And so there's 3 episodes make up a chapter, and then there's a whole number of chapters that make up the season. From what I understand from reading and listening to talks from the creator, who is Casey Wayland, I think he actually wanted to do this as either a TV series or a movie. I think it's more of a TV series, and he couldn't get made. So this started in 2009. The story ended, 2009. The finale was done in July of 2014. So it's 4 seasons over 5 years.
Is it a bunch of actors?
Actors.
Oh, nice.
So the voice acting is really good.
Based on an original script?
Or? All original. And it takes place in Los Angeles. If you go onto their website, which is wherealive.com, they've done the map of LA and put where all the stuff happened.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's so cool. And it's much like The Walking Dead. It's more about the survival story of the people than it is about the zombies.
So is it like Leviathan where there's music and sound effects?
Yes, right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the whole thing. And what's really nice too is it's a free podcast, which is, you know, yay free. But the way they have made money on it is they have merchandising. And part of their merchandising is they take each season, they remaster it, and you can either download that remastering for a price, or you can buy the CDs. And since I'm kind of a technophobe and things can disappear and CDs are forever, I have got them all on CD.
Well, that's neat.
Yeah, and
is this ongoing or is this done?
It's done. So it ended as of July of 2014. Now, what he's going to try to do first of all, there's a fanatical following. So it's not just me being insane. It's so fanatical that they actually have a podcast called We're Not Dead, which are people from their forums that started go over the episodes. And so it's kind of like the equivalent to the podcast, or kind of the equivalent of Talking Dead, is their podcast, We're Not Dead. And it discusses all of them. And towards the end, you know, people have lives and it wasn't all followed, but they did one for the finale episode of We're Alive. And in there, they talked about, Casey was on that one, and he talked about starting a new podcast. He's probably going to monetize it so that they can keep up that, which will be background stories in that same universe as We're Alive. And part of the reason why I love this thing so much was, first of all, I love it in my imagination because the way I picture things, you know, it's always better than movies. Or seeing it. But the other thing is, when I went to Comic-Con one year, they actually had a booth there, and one of the first producers on it was named Shane Salk, I believe was his name. I'm looking at my notes, and that's what I think I wrote. But I got to meet him, and he was one of the voice actors. He played the character Angel. And to meet one of those people, I was an idiot. I'm like, And I know, and he's like, oh, here's a sticker. Please go away. But it was so cool. So,
Who did this? Like, who's the producer, director, the writer?
Casey Wayland.
Casey Wayland.
He's
okay.
Yeah. So he came up with the idea. He's the main. He's the writer on it. He produced all of it. If you go to the site, you can see he on the forums. He would be all over the forums. People would, when it was still ongoing, people would do their predictions. He would go in there and laugh at them, telling them it's not really what's going to happen. Wah ha ha ha! But it's real. It's so good. And you know, as a warning, there is explicit language. If that doesn't bother you,
sorry, I'm out.
And the remasters are so good that I was driving and I was listening to one of the CDs. and there were gunfire in there, and I actually jumped and started looking around because I couldn't, because it sounded like it was right there. So the remasters are really good sound quality.
Is it scary?
It takes a lot to scare me.
Okay, on the level of The Walking Dead, I know some people haven't watched The Walking Dead, but on that level, compare the scariness.
It's pretty similar. Yeah. You don't have the gore, except right. for what's in your mind.
Visual.
So right. if you're a gory person in your head, it's gory.
Is there a score? Yeah.
There's a score. It's wow. fully produced.
So is this like a professional production, or is this, do you imagine, are these fans that just had this idea and...
It's a professional production.
Oh, nice.
As an example, the main character, his name's Michael. Michael is the person who does the voice production for Michael is named Jim Gleason. And he actually, you can IMDb him. He's done a number of acting roles, including he was on one on an episode of American Horror Story, which is, you know, a well-known TV show. All of them, if you go through all of them, and you can do that. In fact, you could go to IMDb and put in We're Alive, and you can see the whole cast and go to see their credentials.
Oh, nice.
How long is each episode?
About a half an hour.
Oh, so yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, so this is one of the ones that I would leave all the three pieces of the one chapter together so you could hear it. And see, the other thing by going into it now, you don't have to do the waiting, is it would be weekly, the three chapters, and then you'd have 2 weeks until the next chapter started, which used to drive me up the wall because I want to know everything now. But yeah, it's, I highly recommend, especially if you like zombie, but even if you don't like zombie, if you like the whole survival and what you have to do to survive, the way he developed the characters, the way he developed the big bads for this, the whole series, is, well, obviously the zombies, but there's like a mysterious figure that they call Ink because he's covered with tattoos and you don't really know anything about him, and that slowly develops what Ink is throughout the whole four seasons.
Is there a mystical element to this?
Or? No mystical.
Okay.
But the zombies are not created by anything that I've ever heard before.
Yeah, what's the zombie mythology in this?
Well, see, if I do that, it ruins it. It okay. takes away from the rest of the
Don't
thing.
Do that,
so
then.
It's one of those things that slowly develops. The other big bad are the Maulers. And those are humans. Because let's face it, if it really was an apocalypse, as I'm sure everyone's discussed, people are going to be bad too. And it's how they interact and how much harder the Maulers make life, and it comes off really organic and real. I mean, I could see things playing out that way if zombies really did come to the world.
Wow.
That's awesome. What's it called again?
We're Alive.
We're Alive.
We're Alive. Very cool.
I think I'm going to check that one out. That sounds really cool.
I don't think I'm going to because it scares me.
I think I can handle it without the visual. It's usually the audio or the visual that gets me, so maybe if I take one of those away.
Although I did really like Leviathan, and you told me about that one a long time ago. And but that isn't necessarily scary. It's just a suspenseful kind of a science fiction-y story.
Well, and this is more suspense because you're not seeing the gore, you're not seeing the... So I consider it more... Yeah, it's more suspenseful because... I mean, to me, suspense makes equal scary in my head, and I don't think this is any more anxiety-inducing than Leviathan, except for I was more emotionally tied into the characters of this than I am Leviathan.
So, speaking of characters, and I can go next if you like, because I was going to talk about Dragon Age Inquisition because I finished it this week.
What?
Yes.
No.
Now, for those of us who don't know, and I do, but for listeners who don't know, what is Dragon Age Inquisition?
It is a video game, basically. It's an RPG, so a role-playing game. It's my first one that I've finished. I started BioShock, but... It was a little scary.
BioShock Infinite or the first
BioShock
one?
Infinite.
Okay.
And I discovered about myself when I started BioShock Infinite is that I am not a first-person shooter type person. I don't necessarily like machine guns. I don't like having to switch between different weapons. I don't like having to worry about ammunition. That's too much for me. I love story, and that's what Dragon Age Inquisition did. And that's the reason I wanted it, is because everything that I read about it was heavy on what happens in this world. And it's written by a guy named David Gator. And BioWare developed it. But the writing on this was key to enjoying this. Because not only is it an open world, which I like, kind of like Myst, if anybody ever played Myst. Myst was like this open world where no matter where you turned, you had something to discover. So they've taken this, obviously, and it's many a decade later, but so the animation is beautiful. But you can roam anywhere, and everything that you do has consequences. Whether it's a minor quest, like you pick up a letter and it leads you to a treasure map and then you find the treasure, or you're talking to somebody and they either decide to join you or they don't, and if they join you, they end up dead, like, way later in the game, and you're like, holy crap, I did that because I told them to join us. Everything, and every dialogue has choices, and it's so it makes you feel like you really are part of this story in a sense that I've never experienced with anything. And I've played a lot of video games, but not, again, the first person shooter. I'll play Legos and stuff like that. I like shooting things for studs and I like the funny little animations that come with the Lego games. I get that. And I really do enjoy it, but nothing has, like, when I started playing this, an entire day would go by. And I would stop playing and realize that when I started, it was 7 in the morning, and now it's 4. And I sound like a terrible parent right now, but...
Where are they? What are they doing?
I was on vacation. Full disclosure.
Usually it's the other way around. The kids are spending all the time, and the parents are like, get off that thing.
Yeah.
So wait, you finished. So are you in mourning?
I am. But here's the lovely thing about this, and I was talking to Scott last night. I can do it again.
Yes.
And because
it'll be completely different.
And you could, can you set the difficulty?
I can set the difficulty because obviously me being a wimp, I started on easy.
Right. So now you could do super hard.
Now I could do nightmare level. That would take it away. So to me, the fighting, at first I didn't understand why you had to have fighting in this game because I don't really particularly like it. And then about halfway through, I realized I was looking forward to killing the demon. It's like I'd gotten to a point where I had figured out how to, you know, move and how to handle the different controls and what weapon I needed. And I never thought I would like the idea of crafting anything. Like, you get the opportunity to craft armor and to craft weapons. And I got to the point where I would be looking for things so that I could craft better weapons. And I ended up with, you know, what I thought was the perfect bow and arrow setup. And who am I? I was like, who are you? But it was beautiful. And so I can choose, like, one of the biggest decisions I have right now is, and I'm not going to start it again until I go on vacation again, because it'll just suck up the entire day. But do I want to play as a guy this time? Because that has consequences. You can play as a human, you can play as an elf, you can play as a dwarf, and you can play as a, I don't know what the fourth one is. Canari, which is this species that has horns. And then those are the four types of people you can play. And then you can choose to be a mage, a warrior, a rogue. And I mean, so it's infinite possibilities in terms of how, and who you are affects how people talk to you. So if you're a mage, that comes up. That has something to do with the story. So it's going to be fun to play it again.
How did you choose what you were? Because my idea of gaming is seriously Candy Crush, which is an insult to all gamers.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Like, do you call it gaming? Okay. Is that called gaming?
No.
That's a really good question. So because I was so afraid to play this game, I wanted to play this game, but I was really afraid to play this game. Kind of like how I felt about Uncharted. When Uncharted came out, I wanted to play it so bad, but I was petrified to play it. And so instead I made my husband and son play it, and I would stand behind them and watch them. And then I tried to play it one day and I got overwhelmed because I'm not good at the guns thing. It scares me for some reason. Bow and arrow, I'm good with. But so before I started playing, I was watching people play the game. Felicia Day played it. Jesse Cox played it. And I would watch their playthroughs and I felt more comfortable. And from there, I decided, okay, I don't really want to be a melee player, which is somebody who runs right up to who you're fighting and stabs them. That's too close to the danger. Also, I didn't necessarily want to play an elf or a canary or a dwarf because none of those people are attractive to me. So I'm like, why would I want to play somebody that I'm going to have to look at for hours and hours? So I just chose a human and I chose a rogue archer. So I could stay way, way back and then just shoot people with my arrows.
So are you controlling a party, or is it just one person that you're controlling?
There's two different types of combat. So for those that understand combat, I didn't understand this at first, but there's where you're controlling your own character and AI controls the other characters. And depending on how you set them up with what weapons they have and what armor they have, they just do their business. And I trusted that level and it worked perfectly for me. So I would stay back and shoot with my arrows and my two melee characters would run up and stab, stab, stab. And then I'd have my mage, you know, freaking out with all the spells. And I didn't have to control any of them. There's another type of combat that you can do where you can click a button and you can look at it from above and you can decide what everybody does. You kind of like pre-plan it.
Yeah.
You go over here and you go over here and you go over here and you move here. And I was like, no way, I'm out, because that's too much work.
But that's kind of cool.
You mentioned Felicia Day. This game, because she's actually does a voice in this game, I think.
Dragon Age 2 she did.
Oh, Dragon Age 2, okay.
She's not in this one.
But people were asking her, are you going to like live stream this? And she kept on saying no because she was like wavering, mostly because she did Dragon Age 2. And so she has a relationship with the game developers and all that. So she thought that it was kind of weird.
Her and her brother did a stream where they did Dragon Age. For about, and they came up with the ugliest character, and every time the camera would go to the character, it was like, but they did it just kind of, I think what she wanted to do, because she was so excited about it, because she was playing it, I think she just wanted to get people excited about it, so they did, I think it was like 2 or 3 hours, and that was okay. It. They never went back to it.
Okay.
You choose what your character looks like, so you pick human, so you get this color hair and this color eyes.
Everything is customizable, even the voice. I could choose between two different actresses. I was like in heaven. It took me probably an hour and a half just to design my character. Fix her hair, fix her the size of her eyebrows, how I wanted her cheeks to look, whether I wanted her chin to jut out. I was, and you could do tattoos, skin color. I was obsessively designing her.
That would be me. I would design it, and then I wouldn't know how to move her out of the little room, and I'd be done. But I could. That would be me to design the character.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I made her lips too big, and so... And I didn't realize it until I was done. And then so like the first 3 hours of the game, I'm like, God dang it, your lips are too big.
And you can't go back and change it.
So I vowed the next playthrough, lips. I'm going to focus on the lips.
Maybe we should title this podcast, Lips.
Lips. Anyways, I highly recommend it. And I highly recommend it for anybody who's afraid or hasn't played RPGs before, because it was such a great... a way to kind of learn how to play the game. My son knows me, so he bought the book, the guide, you know, because I get scared to death. To the point where, honestly, before I had to kill the first dragon, I couldn't sleep. And the whole night, I was stressed out, sweating.
Because you care so much about the dragon.
I didn't know, because I didn't want to lose. I was like, I will not be defeated by that dragon. I do not want to try and
this
beat him
is
more
going
than once.
Down.
Yes. And I was like obsessively trying to plan, okay, what do I need? What potion? It was crazy. So the book really helped kind of calm that down, because otherwise that could have been crazy the whole time. And then I listened to a podcast, because again, I got obsessed about it, called Dragon Age. Oh gosh, I can't think of the name of the podcast, but I'll think it by the end of this. And I found out that, because at first I was... There's this one section of the game where I played it. It was the party, for those that have played it. It's the event, the gala. And I finished, and then I wanted to beat myself over the head, because at one point you can actually outfit your team from their gala outfits into their armor. And I should have done it, but I didn't. So as a result, I used up all my potions. And as a result, I didn't get what I didn't complete, like, three of the different things I needed to complete. And so... stayed up all night thinking, should I go back? Should I do that one again? Should I go back to the previous save? And then I listened to this podcast and they were like, we've played it 3 or 4 times and we've never gotten everything, so it's impossible. So I felt much better. But yeah, anyways, highly recommend it.
So, but not a game for completionists.
You know what? If you are a completionist, because I am sort of, not quite, not as bad as some, but if you are a completionist, you just have to know that it will take you hours and hours and days and days and days to finish this game.
Gotcha.
Because there's so much to do. Literally, at one point, I looked at the map and all the things I had to do, and it was overwhelming. Just break out in a cold sweat, just thinking, like, every dot on the map represented something I had to do. And it was, oh. but yeah. So that's, you know, if you are a completionist, it'll just take you forever. But
oh, wow.
You can do it.
Well, allow me to switch gears completely. Have you guys heard of the movie Spotlight?
No.
Okay. Neither had I until last night. It's just a very cool discovery. I'm just going to tell you who the cast is. Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams.
I'm in.
Michael Keaton, Stanley Tucci, Liev Schreiber, Billy Crudup, John Slattery, and I think there's more. So why isn't this a movie that we've heard of? Okay. I'm assuming it's a little indie. I heard of this last night because I decided to rewatch one of my all-time favorite films, The Station Agent, which is made by Tom McCarthy. And so I was curious, what's he doing next? So it happens to be this movie called Spotlight. And I'm assuming it's going to come out right around award season because this has awards, you know, just written all over it. But what it's about is the team of journalists at the Boston Globe who from 2000, well, I think it was like a decade of investigative research that led to, in 2003, the news about the Catholic Church and the way that they were moving priests who were accused of molestation and putting them in different... It led to the Cardinal Bernard Law, you know, his resignation. It was... Well, obviously, we all remember this. It was huge. Became a global, you know, news item. Pretty horrific stuff, obviously. This movie focuses on the journalistic team. Obviously, I'm former journalism major, and I always love, I mean, I have a real love for these investigative reporters that do the work of, you know, the FBI, essentially, in finding out the truth behind things and then letting the world know about it so that something can be done and so that a change can be made. So this is a movie I'm really excited about. But the whole reason it came up was because I decided I wanted to watch Station Agent. Have you guys seen that movie?
I have not.
I've heard of that.
It's on my list.
Yeah.
It's on my Netflix list.
Yeah, it's on your list because I keep telling you that you have to watch it. So. So it's a really small film. It starts off really slow. And I think it was one of the very first films Peter Dinklage made. And it's his story. But it's ultimately, Bobby Cannavale is in it and Patricia Clarkson. And it's about this extremely unusual friendship that forms between the three of them. He has basically removed himself from life. You know, he is, as someone who refers to himself as a dwarf, he has had his dealings with people, and he just kind of decides he doesn't want to deal with them anymore. But Bobby Cannavale is this extremely obnoxious and ultimately extremely lovable character who basically inserts himself into Peter Dinklage's character's life. And then there's another character who has had a real trauma in her life, and somehow they forge this unusual friendship, and it's just really, really a beautiful film. So... but it is slow, and you have to get used to it. But anyone who's, you know, excited about Game of Thrones coming out in April, if you want to see something else that Peter Dinklage did.
And that's Station Agent?
It's called Station Agent, and it has to do with trains. So that's the Station Agent. So. Okay. But that also led me to think about what my other favorite film is, and there was some big news that came out this week about that movie. So when I talk about my favorite films, I was talking about Station Agent, which is this tiny little film. And then, of course, I talk about my other favorite, which is Aliens. The second one. So there's something about Aliens. And again, it's interesting. I was trying to always... Why do I mention those two together? And it's the same thing. There's this forging of friendships in under unusual circumstances. And that's one of the reasons that I particularly love that movie. And so this week we found out that Neil Blomkamp is going to pick up the franchise, and Sigourney Weaver has signed on, and there was a ton of wrong news that came out. Initially, it was he was going to undo the third and the fourth film and pick it up right after the second film. It's come back to where it's going to be something that takes place between the first and second film. He says he's not undoing any of the other films.
Oh, it's going to take place between the first and the second?
I have no idea how this is going to work.
Oh, I thought it was going to happen after the second.
I thought so, too, and there was real joy in my heart thinking that there was going to be a revival of some characters that I love.
What is Neil, however you say his
Blomkamp.
Last name? What is he known for?
District 9.
Oh, okay.
He also did Elysium and the new movie Chappie.
Which right, is coming out on Friday. That's a big one. I wasn't pleased with Elysium. I I didn't really care for it. It was fine, but it wasn't. I was looking forward to more District 9 kind of experience. So I am looking forward to Chappie in hopes that I can feel good about him taking on my franchise, because the franchise unraveled. Anyone else here see all four movies?
No. Oh, I saw the third one.
Aliens.
Yeah,
I saw all four.
Yeah.
So was it the third one's where she was Sigourney Weaver was in the third one, right? Is that where she was the clone?
She was no, that was the fourth one, the bad one.
Third one was the prison movie where she shaved her head.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have seen all four.
So just real quick, I am so passionate about aliens, and last week we were talking about how I'm afraid of all horror movies or whatever, and I remembered afterwards, my favorite movie of all time is Aliens.
Seriously? You hate horror movies?
Yeah. I watched Aliens in the theater 7 times, and the last four times
I saw it 16 times when it originally came out in the theater.
I went by myself to see this movie. I love this movie so much.
We could quote the movie.
When the third one came out, I was very excited, and when it started with Newt and
spoiler.
Oh. Well, anyway,
it starts very dramatically.
What it did was it basically took everything that was wonderful about the end of this of Aliens
and destroyed it.
Yeah. I agree with you. I was really upset when I saw that movie they did that.
I think that's a universal complaint about that particular movie.
Which is why decades later I saw the movie again, because I wanted to just, is this movie as really horrible? Because it ends horrible. I mean, it starts horrible, it ends horrible. It's just horrible. And so I'm thinking, okay, I gotta just give this movie another chance. So I watched it again decades later, knowing everything, going into it, knowing the disappointments that was going to occur. And I really, really liked this movie. And then I figured out who made the movie, and then I understood why.
It was Fincher.
David Fincher.
It's a David Fincher film. And, you know, known for Fight Club, Social Network, more recently Gone Girl, Seven. He does some amazing things, and that movie, as a standalone film, is an excellent movie.
Yeah, if they had done it with different characters in the same world, I think it would have been received differently. But James Cameron even talked about it, because he directed Aliens, and he said the problem was, you spent all of Aliens investing yourself in these characters so completely that when your audience shows up having been invested in a character and you throw that investment kind of away, you alienate them.
Brilliant. Okay, so the movie, and I can't think of the name of it, but you guys are going to know because you're all Aliens people. The prequel movie.
Prometheus by Ridley Scott.
Okay, now, are they going to continue those too?
The second one's coming.
Oh my god, they are? That failed. I thought that failed.
I thought it was it
succeeded in the box office, that's all that matters.
Wow.
And I think it's the kind of film that they can easily sell internationally. Action films do really well worldwide, and that's where a lot of that stuff
goes. That's very true, yeah. Unfortunately, that movie really disappointed me. There were some great things about it, but ultimately
Come on, Idris Elba playing the accordion and seducing Charlize Theron. How could you say that that's bad?
Yeah, Charlize Theron said it. That's only you're sold. Mad Max, by the way, that's why he's looking forward to that.
I kind of feel that way about Idris Elba. He could be in anything.
I know. I feel the same way.
Just to hear him, you know what? He's named to be. He's talking. I love his voice. And when he uses his, he's British. Doesn't he have a British accent?
Yes, he is.
Yes. Tears accent. Oh.
And remember, a couple of months ago, somebody mentioned that he'd be a great James Bond, and everybody lost their minds. And I'm like, wait a minute. Idris Elba is one of the coolest actors that we have. Not we as like Americans or British, but that we actually see. He's awesome. How could he not be great in that role?
They want him for the Doctor. I'm pretty sure he was one of the guys that was listed for the Doctor before Peter Capaldi was mentioned. As one of the short list people that people wanted. They want him to do anything.
But I mean, he's done movies like, last movie that I remember he did was Pacific Rim, right?
Thor. He was in Thor.
No Good Deed Goes... He's called... It's No Good Deed. I don't know if it goes all the way. Goes Unpunished, which is a thriller, which is a really good movie. He did an excellent job in that. But he had an American accent.
Well, you know, there's always, whenever you talk about James Bond or Batman, it's just, there's always, and the Doctor, there's always people who are frustrated with whatever decision. They didn't like it when they gave it to the current Bond, who I think is fabulous. What's his name? Daniel Craig.
Who, by the way, got injured again.
He did?
Yeah. Like, it was a driving scene, and they did a bump, and he hit his head on the top and got knocked out.
And, what a wimp.
I'm sorry. That's very un-James Bond.
But the thing is, the reason he didn't crash, because it was going really fast, is they talked about this on K-Rock, which is the only reason why I know this happened. The stunt guy is actually, there's like two steering wheels, and the stunt guy's actually driving, and the star, as they're filming him, has a fake stuff, and so that he had the fake stuff got knocked out, and the other guy was able, the stunt guy was able to stop it, so he didn't get, but that's the second time he's been injured in this movie, and I think he got injured on the last movie.
Is that movie coming out this year or next year?
This year.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of movies to look forward to.
Yeah.
Well, cool.
Spectre.
All right, Kevin, you're up.
Holy crap, really?
Surprise! Boy,
your topic, like, really took a circuit.
Oh, yeah. We're talking from, Boston Globe.
Station agent.
Catholic Church.
Idris Elba. Charlize Theron and all that.
Oh, Charlize Theron. That's where you're going to stick. Okay.
The dress.
Yeah, that's my focus. Okay, well, my item is actually referring to something that I mentioned in the last episode, which we talked about zombies and post-apocalyptic stuff. I had mentioned that my most anticipated movie is Mad Max Fury Road.
Because of Charlize Theron.
Because of Charlize Theron. Who cares about Tom Hardy or Nicholas Holt or anybody? But, I mentioned Age of Ultron, the Avengers movie, and I mentioned Star Wars. And what I wanted to do is I wanted to kind of redeem myself with respect to Star Wars. Because I am a Star Wars guy. As much as everybody gave crap to the prequels, I can still watch them. There are certain parts of it that I can enjoy. Some that I can't, but we're not going to talk about this because this is a positive podcast. So, I saw the first Star Wars movie when it first came out in 1977. It was the first movie I ever saw. So as a kid, it just grabbed me. And so the first three movies that came out were like the best movies I'd ever seen. As I grew up, I realized that Return of the Jedi, not as loved in my mind as Empire Strikes Back is, but that's a completely different podcast, which I'll do on my own. What I wanted to establish is the fact that I am anticipating Force Awakens, this December, but there is something that I am watching on a regular basis on TV, which is a show called Star Wars Rebels.
Yes.
Have any of you watched it?
Yes, no. I have.
Okay,
I
have. So
is this animated?
It's yes. It's CG animated, and it's set 14 years after Revenge of the Sith ended. It's 5 years before A New Hope begins. So what we do is we follow this kid who, at the beginning of the series, is 14. He's an orphan. He's a scavenger. He's a street kid, so he's very aware of stealing things and basically surviving under the oppression of the Empire on his planet. I'm giving you kind of like an overview of the opening episode. He ends up bumping into a bunch of people who are trying to steal something from the Empire, and he, Ezra, steals something from them. So they start going after him, and that brings this kid Ezra in with this other group. And this other group includes a female Twi'lek pilot. A Twi'lek, if you don't know, is in Return of the Jedi in the palace, there is a slave girl with in green, and she's got these appendages on her head. That's a Twi'lek. So there's a Twi'lek pilot, and she's very smart. There's a human who's the leader of the group named Kanan. By the way, the Twi'lek is named Hera. The human is actually a Jedi. We don't know that initially, but we do find that out in the pilot. There's a character named Sabine, which is a Mandalorian female. A Mandalorian is what Boba Fett is. So imagine a slender-looking Boba Fett, but with Boba Fett's helmet painted in pink and really kind of cool designs, because she's like a kind of like a punk like graffiti artist.
Boba Fett.
The Boba Fett was the bounty.
The bounty hunter, from okay, good. Empire Strikes Back.
But who's the slug thing?
Jabba.
The Jabba. Jabba. Okay. Jabba.
So
you were thinking of a slug named Jabba.
So one person at this table isn't as well versed in Star Wars. So, that's fine. That's
sorry,
fine.
But that would have been awesome.
And then the last character is a character named Zeb, who is an interesting character. He's a large guy, gruff voice. Kind of like a rude version of Chewbacca, which I mentioned Chewbacca because, all right, this is where my geek card comes out.
Just now?
All right, someone would have got it to this point.
My OCD geek card. Okay, so in the pre-visualization of the very first Star Wars, an artist by the name of Ralph McQuarrie was hired to develop the art direction for the movie. And so a lot of the art direction from the very first movie comes from these very original paintings that were done in like 2 years or so before the first Star Wars movie came out. And so you look at some of these paintings and, you know, C-3PO doesn't look exactly like he does now. Darth Vader looks more samurai-ish than he does now. So a lot of different things. The Millennium Falcon, he did a painting of that. It doesn't look quite the same. It was really early days in Star Wars when Ralph McQuarrie did these paintings. And there was one painting he did, and this is a long description, but this has to do with the character Zeb that I'm describing. What Ralph McQuarrie did is he painted a four-character idea of what the main characters in the first Star Wars movie were going to look like. And so he painted Chewbacca, and he was kind of hairy, but he looked nothing like the Chewbacca that we all know. He had a kind of strange-looking nose, gigantic eyes, and he didn't have as much hair. And so what they did in Star Wars Rebels is they took that visualization and they created the character with no hair. They turned him purple, and they did it almost specifically as a nod to that one painting. So it's like, you know,
that artist.
I mean, if you knew nothing about that painting, the artist, or the storyboards that Ralph McQuarrie did, then it's just a character to you. But I saw this character and went, holy crap, I know that. I'm like, this is something that everyone who grew up with Star Wars knows. And so to see that, it was really, really cool. But the Zeb character is also very intelligent, even though he's kind of like the muscle of the group and everything. The last character is a droid, which is a droid named Chopper, and is unlike any droid that we've ever seen in any Star Wars iteration, at least in movie form. Chopper is an irritable, jealous, vindictive droid. Very loyal to the group, but there's one scene where he's on the... he's on the ship. The ship that they fly is called the Ghost. And the ship is flying, and Chopper is next to another droid that features in the story, not R2-D2, but just another droid. And Ghost, the back of the ship is actually open, so it's like open to the air, and the ship is flying, and Chopper nudges the droid out of the ship, and it just falls out of the ship. Because he's a jealous, irascible droid. And it creates a lot of humor in the show. And initially, I have to say, when I first started it, when I saw the pilot, I thought, this is a little bit too kiddie for me.
That's what I thought, too.
This was a little bit too simple.
That's their intended audience, right?
Yes, because it's on Disney XD. So it's definitely for kids. And so I didn't dismiss it. Because I love the animation in it, but I didn't know the characters well enough. I didn't know the relationships, and I've seen too many Star Wars shows that just utterly failed. All I have to say is Star Wars droids or Star Wars Ewoks, and anyone who listens to this will go, yeah, I know what you mean. Because those, you know, game tries, but not very good.
The Clone War, is that, because I know there was a animated that Clone War. Does that hook into this as well, or is that just totally separate stories?
Separate stories, separate production departments.
Okay.
It's the thing about, if you know the CG, because there's two different Clone Wars series. One was a 2D cell animated one, which was really awesome. And then they replaced it with a CG version, which was a departure. And that, the CG was very stylized, you know. The hair was kind of, almost had right angles to all of the beards and things like that. This animation is a lot more realistic. Mm-hmm. Still cartoony, which is, I think is fine, but a lot more realistic textures and all that in Star Wars Rebels than in the Clone Wars one. But what I was going to say was, over the course of watching these episodes, I started getting invested in these relationships. You slowly start to understand why people are acting the way they're acting. And we've gotten to the point now where there's a little bit of a mystery about characters that we thought we knew, and we're like, holy crap, this is getting good. And so this week is actually, the week we're recording this is the last episode of this season. And
this is the first season?
Yeah, this is the first season. And at this point, I'm sold. It's a show I DVR and I watch it the same day. It's fun. It's funny. It's action packed and I definitely recommend it. I think anybody who wants to bide their time between now and when this movie comes out, if they want to get their Star Wars fix and they don't want to do comics or books or anything, I think this is a good way to bridge that gap. I do want to mention really quick one other Star Wars thing. It was just announced. Another TV series was announced. It was a Lego Star Wars series called Droid Tales.
Oh, cool.
And it's a 5-part series. It's going to be a Lego summary of every Star Wars movie so far being made. And so they're going to do the entire Star Wars thing Lego-like.
I played those games. They were genius.
Before the Force Awakens opens.
They're so, pulling in the kids, which they don't have to do because they're already pulled in. It's amazing how cross-generational Star Wars has become.
Didn't Robot Chicken already do this?
And
on that note.
that was definitely adult. Definitely awesome. So anyway, those are two Star Wars things that I think that the Disney company is trying to get people into to bide their time until the J.J. Abrams movie comes out. And at least with respect to Star Wars Rebels, I'm totally sold.
One more thing. When you're mentioning bad Star Wars, you forgot to mention the worst. The one that's so bad it comes around to being good.
Which one?
The Christmas special. Oh. How did you not mention the Christmas special?
No, sorry. I own that.
On VHS, right?
On VHS.
I thought they never sold that. I've only seen it. I saw it when it aired.
You have to buy it through like convention channels. Go to a convention, whisper, hey, do you have the holiday special from 1978? Oh, yeah, here it is. I didn't get it that way. I got it on eBay. But, man, I watched that. And I actually watched it when it first aired. And I would tell people who didn't know anything about it, there's only one redeeming value in that entire show, and that's the fact that it's the first time you ever see Boba Fett.
Oh.
Because Boba Fett is introduced as a character in that holiday special. And that is the only reason why I own the VHS copy of it. And it's a cartoon, and it's not completely Boba Fett like. It's done by a different voice actor, but it's actually an animated short with Mark Hamill does a voice in it. Harrison Ford does a voice in it. I think Carrie Fisher does a voice in it. So everybody's in it, and Boba Fett is a character in this short story. But, you know, to answer Kelly, your thing, it never goes from, you know, bad to good bad or lovingly bad. It's all bad. There's no redeeming quality. So, yeah, that's my Star Wars, what do you call it? That's my Star Wars cred for you.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. And please like or subscribe to us. And we'll see you all next week.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mandy.
I'm Kelly.
I'm Katie. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in. We'd love to get your feedback on this week's episode. You can follow us by using the Twitter handle @WECPodcast. That's WEC with two Ks. Like us on our Facebook page by searching for the keyword WEC, or you can email us at WECPodcast@gmail.com. Bye for now.